Hello and welcome to another edition of the World's Greatest Online Magazine presents the Half Baked Podcast. It's the word on everybody's lips, the Wogumpa, which is everyone's swollen lips after they got punched in the face, and that's the only sound that they can make. Welcome back. It works if you think about it. Welcome back. I am Hungry Joe.
DK.
I'm DG.
HJ, DK, DG, coming at you. We
it's like
are
a human sandwich.
No, pronounce that.
Oh my goodness, no. We are coming out of the Thanksgiving weekend. Gentlemen, did you have a pleasant Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was good. Just spent all day driving. So
yeah, we did nothing. It was kind of nice. You guys have good spreads going on? Did you have anything to do with it?
I did not, but it was good. Yeah.
I did have something to do with it, but it wasn't that. It wasn't very special. No,
okay. I was going to say, I made everything, but it was for a grand total of 2 adults and 2 kids, so it's not that impressive. Most importantly, were you able to make a good sandwich out of your Thanksgiving leftovers?
You could make a sandwich out of my Thanksgiving. I mean, I didn't, but you could. It would be possible.
Leftovers would have lent itself to that.
Yeah, you could have made them into a sandwich.
Could you have taken that bold choice?
I can't believe that you knew we were going to do this podcast and you purposefully didn't make a sandwich.
That is exactly what I did. Make a sandwich.
If he knew we were making this podcast, he purposely wouldn't do that. That's not too big of a surprise there. All right, let's move on.
We're all on brand.
Wait, what's that right here? Oh, that is the emergency siren, which means we have emergency news to share with you, even though this podcast won't come out for several days and you will already know it by then. An illustrious MLB player has signed a 7-year contract. That's right, guys. Marcus Semien has signed for 7 years and $175 million. Oh, wait, was that the 7-year contract?
That was a 7-year contract. Okay.
It was, okay, yes.
Yeah. And also, for some reason, the Rangers also signed John Gray and Cole Calhoun. We'll see.
I mean, John Gray is good.
Yeah.
Cole Calhoun is also a human being.
4 for 56, something like that. Yeah, 4 for 56 on John Gray.
That's great. Cole Calhoun is also a person.
I have a friend who's a Rangers fan who's not quite sure exactly why they signed Semien, but he's like, all right, I guess.
We're getting ready to contend in 2 or 3 years. They'll still have him by then.
I was going to say he'll still be around. And it's sounding like, DK, you had mentioned that Scherzer and the Mets could be cozying up to each other.
Yeah, it looks real close.
Basement deal.
It looks real close to Mets and Scherzer. Sounds like at least $42 million a year for 3 or 4 seasons, which would be the highest average annual value contract in baseball history.
Yeah, so, I don't know what to say about that. It's something, all right.
For a guy that hits nothing but singles.
Jeez, lousy singles hitter. Oh, real quick, I'm seeing a rumor here that the Rangers are also talking to Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, I think I said that was it. Yeah, that had been out there for a few days, but yeah. Oh, okay. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting, especially with all these other signings tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the new stadium, I guess. They got the warehouse. They can pack them in.
We don't have to go into it too deep, but the Oakland A's are going to be terrible next year because they're going to tear down the team. You know, the Angels are the Angels. And so really, I mean, again, they're probably a couple years away, the Rangers are, but they'll be a lot closer to, I mean, they're probably on a trajectory right now trying to get to the position the Mariners were in this past year in that division. And, you know, sooner or later, the Astros theoretically will decline.
I mean, the trash cans will eventually dent.
You know, right. they're only going to be like 3 or 4 of the original trash can bangers
left
on the roster after Correa leaves.
Gonzalez will still be hanging around.
I mean, yeah, he'll be there, but they won't play him.
All right. We have so much to talk about. Let's move on. We'll come back to some of this, especially the Byron Buxton signing. Oh yeah, by the way.
That's the real big news. That's wow.
Get the emergency siren on again. Okay, good to go. All right, and anyway, we will return to break that down possibly later and maybe even in the same podcast, depending on how this comes out. But for now, let's move on to a couple quick topics. Let's just do a quick couple minutes on the Wolves. Quite a game in Philadelphia the other night. D'Lo, who is wonderfully frustrating and just wonderful at times. It's really hard to know what to make of it. But in Philly, he was definitely on his game.
He carried the team on his back.
Well, since every other player had fouled out by that point, he pretty much had to.
Yeah. Right.
And that's another thing that we don't need to get into, how some players get fouls called and some don't. We had a good example of it in that game, but
that was a very, very Embiid favorable.
Yes,
refereeing.
It sure seemed to be, considering I think he did foul out all three guys himself too.
Yeah, he did.
Oh boy. Anyway, we won't get into it too much, but real quick, the Wolves, are they determined?
I know people,
they are fun.
People thought they had a bad stretch a couple weeks ago where
they
were very bad. And then they had a good stretch.
And they had a nice response to a bad loss in Philadelphia.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They had won like what, four or five in a row, before that Charlotte game. And then they had a clunker in Charlotte, which, you know, it's still good. I mean, it's going to happen. They went to Philadelphia and went toe to toe with 5-on-8, as some people would say, and they pulled it out. So, you know, they're better than they've been since the Jimmy year.
I was going to say, and a lot of people have said, like, you know, that was a game against Philadelphia that they pretty much would have lost every single of the last like 9 or 10 years, with some exceptions.
Yeah.
Just the type of game it was, they would, double overtime, and they kept up, which is something that they usually don't do. So that's, for what it's worth, that's an encouraging sign at least.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still in on them. I'm not in on them as they're going to win the title or anything. But
I'm not dropping any bets in Vegas or anything, but no,
I'm in on them too. I mean, it's still extremely reasonable to make the play-in games, and it might even be reasonable to start thinking about trying to make a push for the fifth or sixth seed. At the very least, the play-in games, with the way the West looks to me right now, I think the play-in games are extremely, extremely reasonable goal.
I think that's fair. Let's move on to a slightly less sunny topic. You're going to have to school me on this. Did it end on a bright note, or the season?
The regular season, yeah. That was the final game of the regular season. They're 8-4. The Gophers are 8-4, so they will be going to a bowl game.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that real quick. But anyway, yes, it's coming home, like they say.
As they say in England, football is coming home.
Okay.
Except, right, that's what they say.
And I had completely forgotten that game was, well, I didn't even really know it was on at the time. And I'm kind of upset that I missed it, because
it was fun.
Yeah. I think I came onto Twitter like 5 minutes after the game ended, with everybody freaking out, including members of the website.
I was the podcast man on the ground in the stadium.
That must have been a fun place to be then.
Yeah, it was fun.
Can you give us a quick weather report?
It was in the low 40s, and it went into the evening, but it was really sunny at the beginning. So, and there was up inside the stadium, there's not, the wind doesn't really get to where I was. So it was actually
guessing
really nice.
It was, you know, more than sparsely populated as well. A lot of body heat being generated, I'm guessing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about Wisconsin games is you don't have to worry about like a lot of the seats that would be empty at any other game are full for the Wisconsin game. So, yeah, it was a real good crowd, energetic crowd, good, really good atmosphere for a late November game. And, you know, I went to the Penn State game 2 years ago too, which was, I believe, a lot colder, or at least it felt a lot colder. I'm not sure it actually was temperature wise, but it was kind of it wasn't really like full on snowing, but there was some like snow in the air. And I'm pretty sure it was a little colder. And like I said, for being 40 degrees on the thermometer, it actually felt really nice out there yesterday. So
it felt nice for other reasons as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, all kinds of reasons. Yeah, it was a great game. It was, you know, it's been a really weird year for the Gophers.
I was going to ask you to give a quick recap on that. Like, I don't know a lot, but basically, from my understanding, they won some big games and they lost some really small games.
Yeah. That's basically it, you know, and the really ironic thing is none of the small games they lost actually would have mattered if they had won one more big game, which was the Iowa game, which they played well enough to win, but for the majority of it. But some, you know, it was a kind of a coin flip game, and you can blame, and you know, and I think the people who like to nitpick every single decision that's made by coaches, but I think there were some things that they could point to in the Iowa game that are worth nitpicking that were coaching decisions. But you know, to me, it's like coin flip games, and that's what that was. That we played well enough to win it, and we also played well enough to lose it. But yeah, they had losses to a team. I mean, they had lost to Bowling Green from the Mid-American Conference back in September, which was
the other big loss. Well, small loss, whatever.
The other small loss was Illinois, right? Was Illinois? Okay, yeah. Okay. Which I personally am a little contrarian on, because I actually think Illinois is better coached than people are willing to give them credit for being.
Lovey's not there anymore, right?
Correct. They actually they brought Brett Bielema in, who say what, and a lot of people here hate him for obvious reasons that he used to coach at Wisconsin, but he knows how to coach in the Big Ten. He knows what Big Ten football is, and he knows how to coach a team in the Big Ten. And he was prepared for us, and we weren't prepared enough to, I mean, I shouldn't say we, because I'm not on the team, but the Gophers weren't prepared enough to match what they were going to do in that game. But like going forward, I expect Illinois to get better as a program than they've been in a while, because I think Bielema will raise their level. But that being said, like the first loss to Bowling Green was, you know, that's really bad. That's really bad. Can't lose that game. Yeah.
Okay, real quick, is the opponent and bowl game decided yet, or do we still have to wait for that to shake out?
No, they won't know till next Sunday after the after all the conference championship games next weekend.
That the Gophers were supposed to be, if Nebraska did their job, is that right?
If Nebraska had beaten Iowa on Friday, and then if the Gophers beat Wisconsin, which they did, and if Purdue beat Indiana, which they did, then there would have been a four-way tie in the division that the Gophers would have had the tiebreaker on, that would have sent them to Indianapolis for the conference championship game. And Nebraska had a 21-6 lead with like 30 seconds left in the third quarter, something like that.
Like a 15-point lead, yeah.
Yeah, and they blew it.
That's the most dangerous lead in college football.
Oh, right? Yes. Oh, yes.
The most dangerous lead in college football is any lead that Nebraska has.
Okay. Well, we will get to it should we get a chance to get to it. I'm assuming it's not going to be until like Christmas or New Year's, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't. It'll be after Christmas. It's most likely will be one of those, you know, 2 or 3 days after Christmas before New Year's. I don't think it's going to. It's very, very unlikely it will be a New Year's Day bowl. Most likely to be like the 28th or the 30th.
So the Flamin' Hot Cheetos Bowl, right?
Yeah. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl in Phoenix is a top contender, probably. That's not a joke. The Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
Is there a Flamin' Hot Cheetos Bowl? Because that wouldn't shock me either.
There is not. There used to be a Cheez-It Bowl. I think actually that was the bowl in Phoenix also. They'll change their sponsorship. But there is no Flamin' Hot Cheetos Bowl.
Okay.
There's the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl, but that's...
Right. All right. Well, we will keep our eyes on that. And anyway, let us move on to the Vikings. They still kind of suck. Moving on to the Wild. We have Professor DG here. So third of the way in the season?
Yeah, almost exactly a quarter of the way through a season.
Okay. So what is the state of the season so far?
They're in first place. They have more points than all but one team in the Western Conference, and... yeah, they're winning 2/3 of their games, so hard to argue with the results. I'm less than convinced that they're going to be a 2 seed in the conference or a 1 seed in the conference, but yeah, they're doing really good. They're scoring like crazy. I think over the last like 6 games, they're averaging 5 goals a game and all of this. So
I was going to ask first, what has, as of this recording, they are 14-6-1 with 29 points to stand atop the Central. What have been the strengths of the team so far? As you mentioned, scoring as of late.
Yeah. No, scoring has been good pretty much all season long. Scoring at 5-on-5, and also scoring when they pull their own goalie.
Scoring at 6-on-5.
which makes for kind of interesting games, because you just can't turn any game off with this team, because they will score 2 or 3 goals in the last 5 minutes of the third period and make it a steal a point or sometimes even 2. So Cam Talbot's been better the last week or so. So hopefully that's the start of something good. He was pretty well below average for, I would say, the first 10 or 15 games. And yeah, he's been average or better for the last three or four. So depending on how that plays out the rest. I mean, Cam, as we said before, Cam Talbot is Cam Talbot. He's going to be average or he's going to be bad. And you hope for more average than you get bad. And right now he's a little better than average. So that's good.
How's Kakinen?
Still not a believer.
Yeah. Neither is Dean Evason, obviously.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really interesting. So the Wild have games through January, and then there's the Olympic break. If the Olympic break happens and they're not just rescheduling games against other teams because of COVID and such.
As a quick side note, it's still kind of up in the air if players are going to play in the Olympics, right?
It's not official at this moment that they're going to go. Yeah. The NHL has said that that's the plan, but they haven't actually made the plan that they're going to do that. So they're reserving the right to not send NHL players yet. But like, teams are announcing their rosters and they have NHL players on them. So
right. Make for a more fun Olympics at least. Yeah. All right. So the schedule with the Olympics, sorry.
But yeah, after the Olympics, then the Wild have it's like four games a week, every week for the remainder of the season, as opposed to right now where they have two or three games a week. And so right now they can kind of play Cam Talbot all the time. And he always gets a day or two of rest in between starts, but that won't be the case for the last third of the season. And so it's going to be kind of interesting to see if they roll with Kakinen or find somebody else. I mean, they don't have a lot of money to go find somebody else. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think that the season, because they got off to such a good start right now, I don't think the season is going to turn on who their backup goalie is. And once we get to the playoffs, they're going to play Cam Talbot every game, no matter what. And so I don't think it's a huge issue for this Wild team, but you know, if you go on a slide and you can't play Cam Talbot all the time, it could be a way for them to really struggle in the future.
Just because we kind of went over it a bit last time, how has the defense been holding up so far? The new additions to the defense, I should say, how have they been fitting in so far?
I've been pretty pleasantly surprised with Alex Goligoski. He's much faster than I thought he would be. He's generally been a really good addition to the team. Like, yeah, he's been really good. Spurgeon is out right now, and they really haven't missed a beat. Kulikov and Merrill have been as advertised, defensive-minded.
Honestly, Merrill's been way better than I thought he would be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I kind of expected Kulikov to be a real solid fifth defenseman, mm-hmm. and he has been at least that.
Right. But,
I mean, I thought Merrill would be a weaker spot, and I think we were hoping that Callan Addison would take that spot sooner than later. That hasn't really had to happen yet because Merrill has been very good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. Addison really hasn't. He got in a couple games. He scored a goal. That was when Alec Goligoski was hurt. And yeah, Addison played a couple games. And yeah, like, the defense has just been solid. Like I said, the goaltending's been a little suspect behind them. And that was the one, I think I put these stats on the site. Rodin and Dumba, just like every shot against Rodin and Dumba was going in for a while there. And it was just like they were playing really good defense and they were still allowing a bunch of goals just because they got crap goaltending. No complaints about the new guys on defense. All been pretty good.
Whereas Kaprizov been holding up this year?
It's been weird. Kaprizov has had a good year. He's scoring more than a point per game. Yeah. But it's not the year that anyone expected him to have. I think everybody kind of thought
he'd be. I feel like there's a general sense of being, you know, underwhelmed so far with Kaprizov's performance.
Yeah, and I think that he hasn't scored many goals. He's on pace for like 20 goals, you know, 20, 25 goals, which that's how many he scored last year. And they're playing an extra 30 games this year. So people were expecting, you know, to be on pace for 35, 40 goals, you know, just lighting the lamp all the time. And he's really not scoring, and he's not shooting that great, which is kind of odd for him. He was a good finisher last year. You know, shooting percentage varies a lot. When you ask me about Kevin Fiala here in a minute, that'll be something that comes up. Yeah.
Ask you about Ryan Hartman, that'll come up too.
Yeah, Ryan Hartman is the other side of that coin. But yeah, no, Kaprizov has been fine though. Like, he's generating offense, he's skating well, all that stuff. Like, I think that it's one of those things that everybody came in like, ooh, now we've given him all this money, what's he going to do? And then he didn't score a goal for a long time. And he hasn't really had those streaks where he just, like, you know, scores two or three and then puts, you know, scores a bunch in a row and all that kind of stuff. There's no reason why that won't happen. I mean, he's playing well. He's getting the chances and all that stuff. He'll put some in as time goes on.
Nice. Yeah. Maybe it's just some. Yeah. I can see him kind of trying to settle in after a big contract, perhaps. I don't know. I'm looking for positive ways to look at it. What are some other, you know, than the defense holding up nicely so far, what are some of the other surprises on the team so far, good or bad?
I think the surprise is that there's legitimate trade rumors about Kevin Fiala. Kevin Fiala is still under team control for another year. They didn't give him a long-term contract, and so people kind of raised their eyebrows about that. But then he came in, and he has half the number of goals that Kaprizov has and just really hasn't looked good. Just, you know, looks frustrated, doesn't bury pretty golden chances, all this kind of stuff. And I don't know, it's one of those things like, when do you cross the line between like, well, this is weird statistical variance to there's something going on here. But if you look at his, like, okay, so his shooting percentage this year is 4.3%, right? That's not sustainable for almost anybody. Even Joel Eriksson Ek, when he couldn't score a goal to save his life, you know, back before last year, like even his shooting percentage was 6 or 7%.
And yeah, so I could manage less than 4 probably. Sorry, yeah. keep going.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like if you look at his career, he's just like, he's above 10% every
single
year.
James Shepard could manage below 4%.
He's going to score. Like he is, you know, he generates too many chances for himself not to score. And I don't know, like, it's one of those things that you can't, like, you can't say, okay, go score now. Continue to take the shots that you're taking, but maybe try putting them in the net. You know, I'm sure Dean Evason has pointed that out to him, that maybe he should try.
Maybe try to.
I mean, let's hope he has.
Right. It's weird. And so he's getting frustrated. He was already frustrated with the way contract negotiations went. And so everybody kind of looks at this as, oh, frustrated player on a one-year contract. What can the Wild get for him? Especially because he's going to be expensive and the Wild don't have money to throw around. And so there's some actual kind of credible stuff out there about, you know, talking to Vancouver about these things and all that. North Carolina, I think, was also one that was mentioned. So, which, I don't know, you know, wingers who can score aren't the most precious commodity. Also, you can't count on Marcus Foligno and Ryan Hartman to both continue to shoot 30%. So we don't want to trade away too much of our scoring because somebody's got to score those goals. So I would bet on the guy who's scored goals before.
Just because he's been having a time lately. What's Hartman been up to?
So Ryan Hartman is the whole thing where Kevin Fiala hasn't considered putting the puck in the net. Ryan Hartman was like, oh, I figured this out. If I shoot the puck into the net, good things happen. So Hartman has been kind of all over. He's kind of been bumped around. He was originally put on the Foligno and Greenway line at the beginning of the season. And that line just kind of ran over people. They were just really, really good. I think Marcus Foligno, the fact that Marcus Foligno is just good wherever you put him is... Like, if you're talking about surprises Wild over the last 3 years, like, all of a sudden, Marcus Foligno is just, like, an all-star caliber defensive forward. And that's kind of really bizarre. So Hartman looked really good paired with Foligno. And then they said, well, you look good here. Let's pair you with Kaprizov and Zuccarello. And so then Hartman's like, well, I'm just going to stand in front of the net. And when these guys shoot, I'll pick up the puck, or I'll be the guy standing in front of the net that nobody covers when they're all trying to chase Zuccarello and Kaprizov around the zone. And he's just burying his chances. I mean, he's shooting over 20%. He's going to keep getting those chances. I don't know if he's going to keep scoring at a 20% clip shooting percentage wise, but if you've got 12, he's got 12 goals in 21 games. He's on pace for 45 goals this season. You know, like, he doesn't have to score 45 goals to have a good year. But if you're off to that kind of start, even if your shooting percentage cuts in half, you're still on pace for, you know, 30 goals. It's been fun to watch. And it's just kind of funny because it's just every night he gets one, you know, and it's always kind of the same thing. He's standing in front of the net and either everybody goes to cover the guy with the puck and he's just left alone there, or he picks up a rebound and buries it. It would have been nice if he did that against Vegas in that one game in last year's playoffs, because he got a million chances there and didn't bury a single one. But,
well, he's learned his lesson from that.
Yeah, he's like, that's coaching right there. Evason went to him and said, maybe try putting some of those in.
That's coaching.
Yep. Yeah.
Do we know yet if Evason is a good coach?
I was going to bring that up.
I think Evason is a good coach, except for when a player gets in his doghouse. Parise, he could not figure out Parise, for better or worse. Like, I don't think that losing Zach Parise is a huge deal or a reason he's a bad coach. But like,
Mike Russo is mad at you.
That's true. that situation just escalated so fast and so terribly just from all through last year. And then I think that Fiala is the same thing. Everson gets mad at Fiala for things, and then Fiala gets taken off the power play, and then Fiala gets down and doesn't, you know, whatever, and he tries to do too much and all this stuff. And it just feels like that cycle continually happens. And eventually Fiala gets out.
A little bit of a Garrity syndrome then.
And I don't know, because it seems like it's just one or two people, and like he obviously doesn't have faith in Kotkaniemi, but
he gets mad at the veterans, not the rookies.
Maybe that's what it is. I think Everson is. I think he's a good coach. I think he's whatever they're doing on the power play. They need to hire somebody else because their power play. Yeah,
it's like the Gopher fans who insist we have to get a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah. It might be.
I mean, they probably do. They probably do need to get a new offensive coordinator.
Oh man! And then, like, if you watch the power play, and I don't like, we don't. I don't want to do like X's and O's and stuff, but like, they skate the puck straight up the ice, and they try to just skate straight into the penalty kill. And it's like you have an extra guy. Like, move the puck to one side or the other, you know, create an imbalance, like put more people on one side of the ice or something. They just, well, it works.
That's what's so funny about that being so awesome at 6-on-5 scoring.
Right. Well, in 6-on-5, okay, well, whatever. We've got, I'm just going to go on a rant here and you can cut
keep going,
this or whatever.
Keep going.
The 6-on-5 thing is funny because the whole strategy with 6-on-5 is you just have the puck. You just don't let the other team change. You have the puck and eventually they just can't keep up with you anymore. And 5-on-4 doesn't quite work the same way because you don't have quite as much. You can't just like overload the zone and just like chase down every single puck because you don't have quite enough guys to do that. And so the penalty kill can just release every time. They just fire the puck down the ice and whatever. And you can't really do that in 6-on-5. And I think that that's maybe why there's such a difference, because the Wild are really good at having the puck. They're not good at, like, and I don't, like, you put Kaprizov and Fiala and Zuccarello on the same power play, and then they just kind of don't ever move the puck toward the net. And like they can do high percentage passes and all this other stuff, but they just don't, you know, Eriksson Ek stands in front of the net and just gets pummeled and the puck never comes to him until there's like 5 seconds left in the power play. And then they try it once and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
I think with your patented, we should try putting the puck in the net approach, you might be a better coach.
I think if they do put the puck in the net on the power play, that would make their power play better. Yeah, so. Well,
okay, you're getting to like the deep analytics here. We really don't have time for this, to be honest. We only have a few minutes left.
XG, baby, XG.
Real quick, what's a really brief look at the season ahead? Super quick. Like, I know that's a very dense question in a small space, but what do they need to keep, you know, this whole, right, you know, staying ahead of like the Blues kind of thing?
Yeah, I think,
the big thing is the Avalanche are coming.
I was just going to say, here comes Colorado was going to be my answer.
Oh, sorry. No, I flipped around my Wild villains. I meant to ask the Avalanche. That's obviously the scarier one, right?
I don't see how the Wild finish ahead of the Avalanche at the end of this season. Like, the Avalanche, they're just too good. So right now, the Wild have 3 games in hand, and they're ahead of the Avalanche by 6 points. It's hard not to look at that and think they're effectively tied for the division.
Right.
Because like the Avalanche, they're really good. So the rest of the division is kind of this evenly distributed group. St. Louis was good at first. St. Louis has been bad recently. Dallas was bad at first. Dallas has been good recently. Nashville's been right in the middle. And then there's the other, Winnipeg. Winnipeg was good and now they're bad. And so like, it's just like the Wild, thankfully, have been pretty consistently good over the first 21 games. And so they've separated a little bit from that group, but it's going to be kind of who has the least bad streaks of those 5 teams is going to be the team that ends up in second place in the division.
So we can hear the rumbling from the top of the mountain. Okay, we have a couple more minutes, and I know you two would probably want to spend a little bit of time on this. What's it looking like down on the farm?
Oh, so bad day to ask that question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Marco Rossi got thrown on his head, and they think he might have a concussion and be out for a little bit. But he looked great. He was scoring like crazy, all this stuff. Boldy just got back. So he's excited. He's been good. I think generally Addison has looked good. I haven't seen his name quite as much as the other guys, but like the Boldy, Rossi, Beckman group has been on fire, which is great to see. And like they're scoring, they're controlling play and all that good stuff. So the Iowa Wild keep losing games like 6-5. So if you're expecting them to call somebody up to replace Kako Kakkonen,
doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No. No. There is no answer in Iowa for that team. So, but they're scoring a lot of goals. They score a lot of goals. They give up a lot of goals. So it's exciting stuff. But I think I would expect Boldy would be the guy that they call up if somebody gets hurt. Sounds like Zuccarello's got a hand thing right now, but they're not expecting it to be more than a couple days. But so I don't think we'll see him yet. But the speculation is that Rossi will not get more than 10 games this year because that way his entry-level contract won't start.
Service time manipulation.
All right. And with that, we're going to have to manipulate our own service
time. That's a good segue into the Twins section, though.
Actually. All right. We will get up on that right after this short break. Okay, and welcome back after we took a quick 24-hour break. Professor GG is on sabbatical, and we have the nebulous Nibbish to step in his place to give us vague notions on what things might look like.
Hi, I'm Nibbish.
And that's still DK. That's still DK, and this is still HJ. Nibbish, because you're on the same wavelength, I have to ask. We had a very brief conversation. Your Thanksgiving was pleasant, I hope, correct?
It was very pleasant.
All right, and the spread was ample.
Bountiful.
What it comes down to is, did you make a sandwich out of your leftovers?
You're goddamn right I did.
There we go. Okay.
So you take the bread,
right?
And you put the turkey on it, and then you put the mashed potatoes on top of that.
Of course.
And then you put the stuffing on top of that.
Ooh la.
Smother it in gravy.
Mm-hmm.
You put it. Another piece of bread over the top of it because we're not open facing this. We're not.
No.
We're
not savages. We're not savages.
We're actually making a sandwich.
All right. Well, I am glad to hear it. You are true to form, as am I. Dan also was. There was no sandwiches. No sandwiches involved. Yep. There we go. Anyway, it was a lovely Thanksgiving. I know we are heading for a change of season as tonight I put all the Sufjan Christmas songs back on my phone. Officially that time of year. And as we continue on, we're also going to do another edition of Who Did the Rangers Sign Today? This might need to be a daily feature.
Apparently. Well, I mean, we could do one with the Mets, and then we could do one with the Rangers.
Right. We can combine those two just for the sake of brevity.
The Rangers signed Corey Seager today.
Yep, for 10 years and $325 million. And what was it yesterday? Earlier in the first part of the podcast,
Calhoun, Gray, and Semien. Definitely lead with Cole Calhoun. That's really important.
Well, that's the one that jumped out at me first.
Semien and John Gray are the big ones yesterday.
Our first part of this podcast, right?
What's that?
They're going to be good three of those years, right?
John Gray probably will be good one of those years.
No, I mean the Rangers.
Oh, of the 10 years that they signed Corey Seager for? Yeah, probably.
And they're just hoping that they're good with all the rest of them because or else I see a lot of third place finishes coming in their future.
Well, because the Mariners also made a big signing today.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Robbie Ray.
I kind of think the Mariners scooped him here. I mean,
yeah,
they scooped a lot of people on Robbie Ray, to be honest with you, because he's
right
Cy Young Award winner.
Deservedly.
Contract wasn't too egregious.
No, it was very, very good. It was very, very.
Dan and I were saying earlier today, everybody's trying to get in out of their end. They're like, oh, you 15 years, $7 million a year? Yeah, where do I sign?
Yeah, no one wants to. Gotta think Carlos Correa is going to go off the board like, what, tomorrow or something?
All right. For the second time, we will talk about another good contract in just a second here, but we got to have a quick fantasy update.
Hey there, friends. I think you know it's fantasy time again. It's time to follow all those stats and figure out who got the most at-bats. Hey, remember all those players? Ones that hit well and had lots of layers in their hair. The ones with the pretty hair. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Noah Syndergaard. He has really nice hair. And he pitches fast. And he looks like a bear. A little bit, if you think about it. Don't think about it too much, though.
Yeah. Currently on top of the Foot and Ball Guys League is Injured Reserve, which I believe is Uncle Walt. Put your initials up in that name if I'm wrong. On top of the B-Leg is HJ. Hey, that's me. Cool. The first round of Survival was won by HJ. Hey, that's still me. The second round, which lasted all of 3 weeks.
What a jerk.
Was whoever is Blame Canada. I have no idea. Yeah, that second round, DG, Danica's Ghost, employed the same type of interesting strategy he did the first time and was promptly out in 2 weeks. The rest of the league only made it for 3 weeks, though, so yeah, great. Okay, speaking of good contracts, the seven-year the seven-year Byron Buxton contract. I think it's welcome news, yes?
Yes. I mean, we were calling for it to get done.
I was actually sharpening my pitchfork after the Berrios signing because, you know, after all this, oh, he wants to test free agency. Oh, he's never going to sign with anybody except for some crazy amount. And then he does for a relatively cost-efficient contract. And my God, after that, if they let Buxton get away too, then it was just going to be like, yeah, my pitchfork was sharp.
I was ready to burn down Target Field. And
I hadn't gotten quite to the torch. I hadn't gotten quite to the torch lighting thing because they go out so fast, but we were getting to that point.
Yeah.
You need a proper fuel source, yeah. But anyway, thankfully, it's not going to come to that.
Right. Ooh. Buxton is back.
And also, I should say he came back, on the kind of contract I was looking for, he deserved a good base, and I think he got a good base. Yes. And it's stuffed with incentives, which is, in my mind, good for both sides. Well, I mean, especially good for the Twins, but I mean, it's kind of what Buxton has to take based on his history. And I think it's good for all concerned.
There was no way he was going to get any contract without just a ton of incentives laden in. I'm hoping that this contract ends up really good for him.
Right.
Because that will mean he's winning at the awards and stuff. But
right.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I've got no problem with the way, like, especially the MVP part is structured.
Yeah, that's fantastic for us and for Byron, to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, he's the type that we just saw this last year. He could win an MVP having only played like 130 games.
Right. Yeah.
I forgot I saw, but the value he's given us, even with you know, truncated seasons, has also been off the charts.
He was worth 4.2 F4 this year, playing in 61 games.
That type of that rate is just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about like
if he played 120 games, then you're talking about over, you know, almost 8.5 wins above replacement if he maintained that rate of production.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're talking top five MVP then.
Right, right.
That's worth how much again?
I mean, that's worth what? How much is a win worth now? Is it $5 million or is it still like four and some change? So that's eight wins is worth $40 million.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's funny. We don't have too much to say because we're all like, this is great.
This is a great deal. Yeah, it's a great deal.
I love this deal, like wholeheartedly just love it. I don't have a single bad thing to say about it. He could go out, and I think this is the real important thing. He could go out and, God forbid, play 40 more games for the Twins, and it was still the right call to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without question.
No, I mean, then, and yeah, the yearly outlays doesn't prove, I mean, especially with the extremely clear books they still have after the next two seasons, it's not something that's going to hamstring them 2 or 3 years down the line. I mean, and it goes to what he's, what, like 34, 35, right? So it's not like it's not like you get Ryan Howard. We're not talking about the Ryan Howard contract or something like that. That's a blast from the past.
Also, he's a blazingly fast center fielder and not the slowest first baseman ever to live.
Right. We'll see if he can still play center field when he's 34. But he's got a long. He's got compared to other people who can't play center field anymore when they're 34. He's got way more room to, as long as, you know, health caveats and all that. But he's got way more room to become a decently good center fielder as opposed to an amazing center fielder, which he is now.
Well, in the last year or two, he's gotten all the jank out of his swing. So, I mean, his swing is sweet and quick now.
Right.
And I mean, with that type of swing,
you could put him in a corner spot and it would be
fine. Could. Yeah. I mean, the way he was hitting this past year, you would have taken that out of your left fielder.
Right.
And we just happen to have the best fielding center fielder in baseball doing that.
Yeah. That's what MVPs are made of. And that's why this is a great deal.
Yeah. He showed this past year flashes of possibly being the best player in baseball, and you have to sign that.
And I'm hoping he looks at those incentives and thinks twice about running into that wall at full speed.
Thinks twice about
maybe just let's play this one off the bounce, okay?
And thinks twice about getting hit on the the wrists and stuff with.
Right. He thinks twice about facing pitchers who stop using sticky stuff and they're letting sliders slip out of their hands and whack him right in the
on the
third and fourth bones of his swinging hand.
Can you imagine if he would have just taken that first month off when they started that transition?
Right.
Gotten back.
I'm just gonna work sit some this
stuff
out.
Off in Fort Myers for a little bit.
Yeah. Gotta rest the hammies.
I can't, you know. People blame him for pitchers who get cracked down on sticky stuff throwing jank balls 5 feet off the plate into his hand, and it's like, damn you, Buxton.
Made of glass, man. Made of glass. Yeah.
Makes me so mad. But anyway,
I bet if you hit him with a car, he'd probably get hurt.
Well, I mean,
be out for at least a week.
That's kind of on him, though, right?
It is.
Yeah. He should run out of the way of the car.
That's right. All right. Well, I guess the reviews are in, and this is overwhelmingly a positive deal. You know what? Here, how about this? Let's get to the pitching side in a second. Now that the center field spot is cemented, what kind of moves do you want to see with position players? I mean, we don't have to delve deep into specific free agents, but what are our strongest needs?
I think we need a low to mid-range shortstop yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about that before, and I think I still agree.
I think
we
need someone who can play third base. I'd like to see, now that Nelson isn't coming back, I'd like to see Donaldson slide into the DH role a lot more often.
Yeah. I mean, they have guys who can play third base. We just don't know how much they have. Well, We did. We're going to do our off the deal morning segment now, I guess. Okay.
Actually, I was joking when we started the last segment that the Wagumba is the sound that you make after you get punched in the mouth. Well, speaking of Astadio. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's been busy. He didn't take it well, yeah.
No, he did not. Okay. Anyway, third base. Yeah.
No, I mean, Arise can still sort of play it. Jose Miranda obviously is going to get a shot sooner or later, unless they use one or more or both of those guys as trade chips coming up. But they have guys who could. I mean, there's always Nick Gordon. We can teach him to play third base more.
He's going to be the shortstop, dude. He's shortstop.
Feeling they're going.
We said low to mid range shortstop. Not
what do you want, man? It's done. Oh no. Oh, okay. Well.
No, I mean, I've said this before, but Andrelton Simmons is a perfect candidate to play a shortstop for the Twins another year.
I don't know if they were willing to actually re-sign him. I'm hearing he wants to go infect the Yankees. I'm fine with
that. Yeah, that'd be nice. That would be nice. I mean, the Yankees probably are also going to try a stopgap shortstop, even though their fans are going to go ballistic because they have a couple young guys who are probably going to get shots there pretty soon, too.
Simmons, Story, Correa, Gonzalez, and Freeman are the main ones on the market.
I don't think they need...
I think I saw somewhere saying, like, Story kind of needs a build back here, so maybe on a lucrative one-year contract he can be signed.
Well, that's, I mean, if he would agree to that, I wouldn't mind that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know how many pillow contracts are going to be signed in the near future here.
Right. The way things have been going, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of pillow contracts happening.
I was going to say that there's another segment we need to discuss, but I don't know if we're going to have time tonight.
We're going to have to do another podcast.
Yeah, we have to do that another time. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Let's keep rosy glasses on the future of labor relations for now. And yes, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, the irony is we'll be able to review all the craziness after nothing is happening in two more days.
Right. Yeah, I don't think you want to lock yourself in the long-term shortstop right now with the possibility that you've got actual shortstop in the minor league, potentially.
Yeah. I think the hope right now still is that Royce Lewis or Austin Martin can be a shortstop of the future.
Right. You got that. You've got your center fielder of the long future, and you've got your second baseman who's an incredibly good second baseman. So if you sign a shortstop long term, you almost have to start looking at dealing one of or both of them, because I mean, right, not that you want to spread yourself thin, but you can't exactly sit on two of the three or four highest level prospects with nowhere to put them for years and years.
Right. So yeah, I mean, Freddie Galvis, come on down.
And that's the exact name I was thinking of, honestly. And I know we've talked about that, but I mean, Freddie Galvis.
Freddie Galvis would be a great fit for.
He could help out at third base too, right?
Probably, maybe. Oh. Yeah,
I think Arise will probably do some.
Yeah, I think you'll see Arise at third base a lot. I mean, I'd be surprised if Donaldson becomes full time DH. I think they'll rotate everybody through that a little more.
Yeah, no, they don't need a full time.
Rocco's already said he's going to do that, right? Or he would like to do that.
I think Tad Levine said that a couple of weeks ago.
I heard someone say that, right?
Because they were asking about Cruz, and he was like, well, you know, We love Nelly, but we're not going to bring him back, guys. Don't get your hopes up, because we kind of want to leave the DH spot open.
Well, I mean, you've got Sano also, who's probably going to benefit from some time in the DH spot. And honestly, assuming you get Kirilloff and Larnick and who knows who else, Rooker. Looking at Rooker spending at least 100 games in the majors next season.
Oh, great. Hope it's not 100 games in the outfield.
Oh, man. I honestly hope it's not. If it's 100 games in the majors, I hope it's not for the Twins.
Yeah. Sorry, Brad. Hope you're not listening to this.
I hope he is. Come on, we need those followers. Smash that like button. Subscribe. 5 stars.
Subscribe, Brad. Subscribe to our podcast.
I think between him and Gordon, we're probably blocked at this point.
We should try to get Nick and Brent Rooker on this podcast so we can hash everything out.
All right. Also, we wanted to discuss something today that we actually brought up on our last podcast. What was it? Almost 2 months ago at this point. Sorry it's been so long, or you're welcome, however you look at it. In any case, in that last podcast, we started to discuss a strange idea.
Instead of trying to cobble together five pitchers and coming four pitchers short, what if in the one particular game I'm talking
about, I don't want to get into this right now,
Bailey Ober started the game, went three or four innings, and then Michael Pineda came in and did three or four more.
Yeah,
and
that was Mike's first start off to the disabled list. Yeah,
it bridged
the injured list
perfectly. I mean, not everyone would do that, but kind of a super opener type situation where you're piggybacking instead of trying to get one guy five or six innings. I think that is the way they have to go. I think they have to go with eight quasi starter piggybackers or something and go with that, because you're not going to get a rotation of five major league pitchers next season. You're just not.
Yes, that's right. The piggyback. Now, we feel we were...
Scoopy Nelson, suck it.
Yeah, that's right. We were on top of this before everyone else, and it's online, therefore it's Bible truth. Anyway, while we didn't expound upon it so much last time, we're going to do that this time. So, please, gentlemen, explain the piggyback and why it's something that the Twins should employ.
Well, DK and I were talking about this toward the end of this year. You've got a whole bunch of young kids that you don't want throwing crazy amounts of innings. It was brought up specifically, who was it? Pineda started, or was it Ober that started?
Yeah, it was Pineda. That first start Pineda made after he came off the injured list against, I think it was in Cleveland. It was a game in Cleveland. And,
it's Cleveland, so you can't really take the results as
right
good because
the,
I'm in.
Not the toughest Cleveland offense that's going to grind a pitcher down anyway. But
Pineda went out there for four innings, and then it was over, right?
I think so, yeah. I'll have to look. It was one of the younger guys. It was definitely one of the
was next came in for three or four more innings, and they gave up practically nothing. It was this perfect new school game, not an opener, and that's the important part, not an opener. An opener goes for an inning and then gives way to a person who's going to go four or five innings. What they did was two multi-inning guys back-to-back, right. Kind of a piggyback system. Right.
That's where we came up with the name, yeah.
And the
idea, brilliant marketing gang.
It's gonna catch on.
I think the term had been out there before. Yeah,
but I mean, you've got a whole bunch of guys who are reasonably decent young pitchers who you don't want to see them pitch a lot of innings just because of wear and tear in the arm. I mean, Ober was better than we had any reason to expect he would be, but you're still not going to toss him out there for 200 innings next year. You're right. Just not. And you've got a lot of guys like Smeltzer and Barnes and whatnot who you really don't want them to see any lineup three times. Right. In any lineup three times.
Jax.
So Jax is the guy I was thinking of, not so much Barnes. Though Barnes would theoretically be in this if he was still on the team. But you've got probably seven or eight guys who aren't really all that useful in a traditional starter sense where you're trying to get five and six innings out of them. And they're really not incredibly useful as long guys on an opener type thing. Even if you give them the first inning, they're still not going to get to the sixth for you. Right. But if you give them three or four and three and four, I mean, you're already in the seventh inning, assuming everything goes well. And that's about what you'd be looking at getting out of a starter and a middle reliever anyway.
Right.
You just kind of optimize for what your pitchers can actually do.
Are you mixing and matching? Are you going to have like batteries where you got these two guys always going together?
I don't think you'd have to. I mean, you could.
You could. Them
on a schedule, but you wouldn't necessarily have to. That would be up to them. They're going to know that part of it a lot better than we would. What they're comfortable with, what they're able to do. Yeah, like, I mean, a lot of starters have the mindset and have built up the routine to pitch every X amount of days. So you'd probably keep them on some sort of rotation.
So how many pitchers would be piggybacking together? What would your full pitching complement look like, I guess? Are there still true relievers? There got to be some true relievers.
Yeah, there will still be some true relievers because you still got to try to cover the ends of those games. Like the piggybacks probably won't get through nine innings just themselves. I mean, and sometimes they might not even get through six if things go badly. But
plus you're not going to want Jax or Smeltzer or whatnot pitching high leverage situations in the seventh and eighth inning anyway.
Right. You'll want to bring in another guy for that. You'll want to bring in your Duffy or your
Colome. It was against Cleveland, the game you were talking about originally, right?
Yeah.
It was Ober that pitched four innings, then Pineda for three, Duffy for one, Colome for the same.
Yeah. Then that was like, yeah, that was a, other than it being Colome, I guess, that was a perfect example of what we were talking about. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot that it was Ober who started it and Pineda came in as the piggyback.
Yeah, I forgot that too.
So the idea, I think, would be, I mean, you got guys like Theobar, you got Alcala, Duffy, and Rogers. If Duffy and Rogers are still both here next year, you'll want to keep those guys around. I think we were thinking, I'd have to go back and look exactly, but I think you'd still want to try to have one at least slot in a rotation be a more traditional starter, maybe two slots in rotation. So you're probably looking at maybe six-ish piggyback type guys. And then you can have six of those guys, like two true starters. That's eight. So then like with five high leverage type pitchers, you've got a 13 man staff. And that to me is a pretty good spread.
On team, who is there anyone you can think of that could fit one of those two starter roles? Maybe Ryan or?
I mean, Ryan is the best candidate. I think he's the best in-house candidate for that. I don't know if they want to put that much on his arm next year either. I think you're probably looking at signing and or trading for guys to fill those two spots. I mean, Mike, you know, Big Mike is a candidate for that, you know, because no one will care about how much you put on Mike's arm as long as he can hold up the whole season. But he's still out there as a free agent, and they seem to be pretty amenable to a reunion at the end of this season.
The starters are flying off the board pretty quick these days, it seems.
The top end starters definitely are. That's why a plan like this might have to be more feasible, because it seemed unlikely to begin with, and it seems even more unlikely now that the Twins were going to be playing at the top of the pitching market this offseason.
So, and that's just it. And not only that, but how expensive it's going to be to field a rotation that isn't absolute garbage is going to be. You've got Ober and you've got Ryan. Do you have anyone else that you would actually stick in a rotation?
No, you really don't.
Oh, come on. Smeltzer doesn't get his whatever-ith chance.
Smeltzer's a perfect candidate for a piggyback. But right.
Smeltzer would be great. I know. In a piggyback.
I don't think there's anyone else that you would say, yeah, that guy's going to give me five innings every 5 days.
Right. I mean, Jax is probably the next closest, and I don't think anybody feels too confident in Jax.
I don't think anyone wants 35 traditional starts out of Jax.
Right.
Or 30 or whatever they get nowadays.
Okay. We have only a little bit of time here left. You're saying all the high-end talents getting off the market. Who around, either a name or a type of vein, would you like to see the Twins go after? Like you said, maybe big money contracts aren't going to be there. So there's a lot of flotsam out there. Who would you like to pluck out of the pond?
Well, from a trading standpoint, I would, for the first thing I think of right now is the coming Oakland Athletics fire sale. They're tearing their team down, and they have three good pitchers who are in, I think, their last year of arbitration, or they have 2 years of arbitration left. Chris Bassett, Sean Manaea, and Frankie Montas. Any one of those guys would be a fantastic trade target to fill a slot for the Twins, I think.
And they got the minor league prospects to go get that.
Right. You know, they have capital to try to deal for that if they're willing to go for it. You know, there are other teams too in positions like that. Like the Marlins have plenty of good young pitchers, probably even more controllable guys, more lengthy controllable guys, but who are a little more established than the young pitchers the Twins have. They just extended one of those guys, Sandy Alcantara, the other day. So he's probably not on the market, but they have some other guys who they still could be willing to discuss for hitting prospects, like, you know, like a Larnach or somebody like that. As far as free agents go, you know, I'm not enthused with a lot of the mid-tier and below free agents that are out there this year.
Yeah.
You're talking about like a Brett Anderson type, probably.
Yeah, I looked at the free agent tracker on Fangraphs the other day. It's pretty dire.
Jay Happ's still out there. We can do another podcast where we're happy.
What are some other names, Nivish, that you saw?
Let's see. Lester, Rich Hill's out there. The old Dick Mountain. Matt Harvey. Chris Archer.
I mean, I'd bring Rich Hill in for one of the piggyback spots, but I don't know if you can get true starter.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, Granky's not coming here. I heard someone saying to kick the tires on Rodon pretty closely. But the counter argument to that is, well, the White Sox didn't give him the qualifying offer. Why?
Yeah. Rodon is a guy that you're probably not going to get a full season out of of effectiveness. He's never done it. And he didn't do it. He was good this year for about what 3/5 of the year, and then he ran out of gas. So I mean, I'd take a I mean, if the Twins can strike a deal with him, sure, I'd take a shot at him, but I wouldn't count on him for a ton of innings either.
Not to be the premier starter to come in. No.
Right.
I agree with DK. I honestly think that if you're looking for that honest, true starter that's going to give you a full season, hopefully, you're looking at a trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope they do it. I think that the pieces are in place, and if they are willing to get a little creative with some roster construction, some and the rotation, I think this can work to where, and like you say, if you can't, then they only have a year or two left. You got your out if you need it.
Right. They could, yeah. Like, say if they trade for a guy like Chris Bassitt this offseason and next year's not going that well anyway, they can flip him in July and get some, you know, reload a couple prospects for that. And you know, and then keep giving the time to the young guys to fill out the rest of the season like they did this year. You know, they have plenty of guys that are getting ready to move up. It's just that we don't want any of them to take on too big a workload too fast. They've got guys in the minors who will get shots. It's just that none of them should be pitching more than 125 innings in a season yet.
Well, this innovative method that you've discussed seems a wonderful way to introduce them to the rigors of Major League Baseball.
Exactly. That's the idea. Yeah. Yeah.
That's our idea.
Yeah,
I like exactly. It was our
that's
idea. Our idea.
Right. That's right. Yeah, right.
And,
there, right
and
there.
It got, all and, you the credit, know, all the credit. And the fun thing is, it seems like it's out there, and it seems like they might actually be considering something along those lines.
Right, right. I remember when you guys mentioned it, I'm like, well, that's an interesting idea. Well, okay. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I'm like, oh my God, they're onto something.
Well, and that was the thing. Like, when we first brought this up, it's like, yeah, I mean, we may as well be telling to, like, I don't know, start playing exclusively 5-man infields. I mean,
right. Yeah. Or 4-man outfield. Yeah.
It will never happen.
That'll be the subject of our next podcast, by the way.
the 4-man outfield. The Joey Gallo defense outfield. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to start wrapping this fielder. Up. We got to start wrapping this up. If we do have a 4-man outfield, thankfully the center of it is well solidified for the next few years to come.
We can use a 2-man outfield.
Oh, actually, yeah. That, oh, I like that innovation.
We can go to a 5-man infield because we can go with only 2 outfielders.
All right, everyone. You guys heard it here first. And you will hear us next time, whenever that might be. And we are looking forward to it, as I'm sure you are. Thank you once again for joining us. And we love you. Sweet kisses. No, take that back. I'm cutting that part out. All right, seriously, just play the music already.
Yeah! Cha-ching!